This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Bigger Picture. So if you were listening earlier, you'd know that the Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin just unveiled his new economic stimulus package to help us deal and cope with the COVID-19 outbreak. It was a $250 billion package, with multiple details and, many, I think, sources of help for people who might need it. But to help us unpack some of the main points, we do have on the line someone who probably knows more about these matters than I do. We have Lee Hock An, Senior Fellow with the Malaysia Studies Program at ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. Hi, Hock An. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon. Good to be here.
So let's maybe just start off with what you would say are the highlights of the stimulus package.
Yeah, well, first I do want to say thank you very much for having me here. And again, I do want to say that I know it's as new to me as to anyone else. We're all in the same boat. But I think this is quite first take and impressionistic. Mm-hmm. But it is 24 pages and it's quite comprehensive. And I think a few things that do stand out. Firstly, sort of the overall figure, and it is broken down to $128 billion for people's welfare, $100 billion for supporting business, including SMEs. And then $20 billion was the one previously approved a few months ago. So a total of $250. And I think we shouldn't really get too caught up in that figure because it's not, it's based on, projections and it's all and subsequent claims, and some of it is, or a large amount of it are in the form of relief and not so much injections and new income. I think a few other things that stood out are, the theme of, prihatin, being concerned about the people and no one being left behind, and targeting for B40 as well as M40, bottom 40, middle 40. I think it also gave a lot of attention and support for, of course, the health workers and Ministry of Health. And then it also had targeted programs and relief targeted at specific sectors. Yeah, so, those sort of some general impressions, I guess, just to get started.
Mm. Which businesses or industries would you say will benefit the most from this package?
Well, in terms of sectors, It's a bit hard to say. I mean, I think it is a speech that was had a few functions, not just for outlining a certain plan and a policy, but I think also it was trying to personalize it by highlighting some that I think are quite prominent, in people's minds, and obviously sectors and groups that are facing hardships like taxi drivers, self-employed. But I think it's really hard to make an overall assessment about who will be most, likely to benefit. I mean, there are quite general, firstly, provisions. So I think in proportion to which sectors are most hit and those that do claim the assistance, then, it will roll out in a way, I think, that will self-regulate, or it will be apportioned according to which are most hit. So I think a lot of services for sure would need it most, and I think stand to benefit because they would qualify, right? Mm. It was trying to also personalize, I guess, towards the end, with this, there was this sort of scenario, right, of a family.
Yes.
What's the name?
Matikia.
Matikia, right?
Yes.
yeah. So, soon to be an iconic figure. but I think more specifically, maybe some that may not be so at the forefront of the headlines, and they're kind of nestled in between. I think and I think these are commendable. So after the loan deferrals for following Bank Negara's directive, That's been extended to microfinance institutes, institutions mm-hmm. like the Kun and Mara. I think that will be really welcome and is a very notable and commendable move. And then the rent deferrals for public housing that's under federal government and FT jurisdiction. And the free internet, I think, you know, that, who wouldn't be happy with that? But also yeah. importantly, at a time right when a lot of both interaction and a lot of transaction and registration and dispersal, right? Disbursement of benefits, which then would require people to have registrations or be providing information. And so that I think was something that was quite expected, right? But to see it there was also positive.
Mm. So certainly, you know, some of the industries that have really been hit by the COVID-19 outbreak have been tourism and retail. And the first stimulus package had some measures to benefit those sectors. And now on top of it, the MCO is affecting a lot of other sectors that are considered non-essential as well. How do you think this package benefits some of those industries?
Yeah, I didn't pick up like very, very specific sectoral allocations. Again, I think as I was saying just now, I mean, it was more general. And maybe there are some details, right, that will emerge later or that we'll be able to see when we can actually read the document in greater detail. Mm-hmm. But I think still with the a lot of the general assistance that has been extended and the relief, I think to a significant extent, you know, the benefit would be proportionate to the impact of the COVID-19 and so retail and services. I mean, I think for the wage subsidy, for instance, that one I do have a further thing to say though. But of course, it was something that you know has been very much in the public domain. So providing wage subsidy for workers whose wages who have suffered loss of income, and this is sort of it's a message, right? It's an intervention for companies, right? For the economy as a whole facing difficulty with paying wages and keeping their workers. So it's an attempt to retain the workforce rather than to retrench. But I think it could have been accompanied, I think, with an exhortation to workers and employers, you know, to negotiate in good faith. Mm-hmm. And I think for a broader sharing of this burden. I mean, just looking at the bare bones of it, it says that for those who are eligible have faced 50% or more loss of income since January and are paid less than 4,000. So that would mean, on the face value, that you could have suffered more than 2,000 loss. But what's provided is only 600. It's a flat rate. So it's not a top-up to what you were actually earning. And if only the lower paid workers are going to be the ones then that have their wages cut because there is this benefit, right, that is provided by the government and not the entire workforce, then I think that could be, that's sort of for the morale quite detrimental, but also, you know, from a moral perspective and how, how companies and the nation wants to move forward. I guess the sense of solidarity, I think, should be, you know, we should try to promote that again by exhorting workers and employers to negotiate, right, and to have this burden of wage cuts and income losses to be shared. Meaning, maybe that if wages are going to be cut for those workers who do benefit from the wage subsidy, well, I think maybe all workers in that company should also accept the cut. something like that.
You know, government debt is already pegged at a high of 53%. Can the government afford the second stimulus package? Will it increase our national debt?
It depends on how it's overall managed. I mean, the overall amount that was of fiscal injection, it was mentioned towards the end, is 25 billion. So it's still actually not a very hefty sum. And it's a question of priorities now, right? Is that figure, which also, you know, it's also debatable where it should stand. I mean, there's a certain norm about 55%, but also in these times when many countries, right, it's a global pandemic, and other countries are also embroiled in it and have to combat it, among other things, with undertaking more debt. I mean, I think, you know, we have to put it in that context and move forward with courage and in awareness, right, that it is something that the whole globe is facing. And so it's sort of maybe a new normal that we cannot just, you know, be beholden, be kind of held hostage to 55% or whatever, a certain threshold of public debt.
Right.
What's the point of talking about that, you know, when a population is suffering, when you have a health crisis, you know, when so much of the economy is forced to shut down, and all the more when a lot of the relief that is extended right now is really postponing, right, payments that have to be made later. So when that time comes, if it's going to be 6 months, and many of them were deferrals of 6 months, you know, for rent and loans, you need to be gainfully employed. You need to be, you know, self-employed and income earning in order to start resurfacing the loans again and paying rent again. So I think the long view, right, is there is partly, yes, that long view about, you know, preserving, but really it's very pressing at the in the immediate circumstances, what just needs to be done, you know, for welfare of the people and just to keep businesses afloat.
So speaking of welfare of the people, in the first stimulus package, we did see that the employees' contribution to EPF was being reduced from 11% to 7%. Now, how does this second package put money in the pockets of the average Malaysian, as well as reduce their debt?
Yeah, well, there is this Bayaran Prihatin Nasional, and that's a cash transfer that is probably the most expensive in this package, and it looks to be a one-off payment, and there are various terms, so even M40 and B40 and singles as well qualify, and is progressive, so low earning would get more of these payments. And for now, it's going to be in April and May. So there are some direct cash payments to be made. I mean, the big question that immediately arises is how, because it's not, in addition to that, the Bantuan Sara Hidup, which is an existing infrastructure. So that those who are in that system will be paid in July. It has to be worked out, and hopefully this will roll out smoothly, how this Bantuan Prihatin Nasional will be received. There were like loan and rental deferrals as well. So those are other forms of relief for low income households. But speaking of this, though, I mean, I think with quite substantial amounts here that have, I mean, amounts that are now exceeding what was could have been received by EPF account holders with the deduction of the monthly contribution and opportunity to withdraw from account two. I wonder, how, you know, how this is this coordinated, you know, and if it is this, given that many households do stand to receive these cash payments, I think it would have been prudent to also send a message that, you know, don't touch your EPF, right, unless you really, really desperately have to, because that is then eating into your long-term savings or your account too, which could be used for property purchase and sort of which is an asset. I would have wished, and I hope maybe, you know, as in the days to come, that there will be a bit of perspective that will be educated in the public, or at least will be people will be made conscious now about what's out there, and therefore the EPF, right, is not something to be. One has to be very prudent about that action, and I think actually it's one that has been controversial and resisted, right, and strongly opposed even by NTUC on the workers' side, and they have also called for their members, right, to not make those account two withdrawals. Mm. I think it would be actually prudent to advise again that EPF, you know, shouldn't be touched. Mm. Wait first for these other cash payments.
Right. Now, I know that there are so many variables, for us to even have an educated assumption about the future at this point. But how long do you think it will take for our economy to recover?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. Mm. I mean, that is the honest and objective truth answer. I mean, among the variables, like you mentioned, are the global situation, right? So this is, at the moment, I think, very much domestic solutions, because we can't export our way out of this, I think, surely coming recession, or anyway, this economically depressed situation, this downturn. And so it also will depend on how things unfold. Mm-hmm. In many countries. And so, yeah, I mean, certainly it's not going to be on the near horizon. But really, so how far ahead we need to look, I don't know, and I really just don't want to speculate. I think we do need to be open, you know, to potential future need for, like, further additions to these packages. Mm-hmm. As well, given these uncertainties. And so, yeah, again, on that note, right, to not be too engrossed in $250 billion, which is a big amount, but it's not, there's many components to it. And a lot of it is actually in the form of deferred payments.
Mm. Thank you so much, Hock An, for helping us, you know, for digesting this 24-page package in such a short amount of time. I mean, I certainly understand it a little bit better now. And yeah, thank you for joining us today.
Okay, well, thank you for letting me share, you know, my very raw and impressionistic thoughts.
Have a nice day. That was Lee Hock An, Senior Fellow with the Malaysia Studies Program at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute, sharing his thoughts and a little bit of analysis on the economic stimulus package for the COVID-19 outbreak that our Prime Minister just announced slightly less than an hour ago. And we do need to take a quick break now, but we will be back shortly to discuss this further with Dr. Jayakumar Devaraj, Chairperson of the Socialist Party of Malaysia. You're listening to The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.